Sounds True presents The Mindful Way Through Depression, Session 2.
Cultivating the ability to shift modes requires that we learn how we can be fully present right here, right now, whatever the here and now presents to us. Sounds good, except for one thing. Much of the time, if things are not going our way, we don't really want to be in the present moment. We want to be somewhere else, anywhere else. What is more, much of the time, it is not so easy to focus our attention on the present moment, even when we attempt it. Our minds tend to be all over the place, leaping chaotically from topic to topic, like monkeys leaping from tree to tree through the jungle. The mind seems to have a mind of its own. Simply waking up to that fact can be an important discovery. But then what do we do? How can we train the mind to be less scattered and more present, even when it is at the mercy of so many distractions, even in the face of strongly unpleasant circumstances or stress? In a time-honored story set in an ancient Himalayan kingdom, a novice monk was excited at the prospect of meeting his teacher for the first time. He was on fire with questions, but sensed that this was not the time to ask them. Instead, he listened carefully to the teacher's instructions. They were brief and to the point. "Get up early tomorrow and climb to a cave you'll find at the top of this mountain. Sit from dawn to dusk and have no thoughts. Use any method you wish to banish thought. When the day is over, come and tell me how it went." At dawn the next day, the novice found the cave, made himself comfortable, and waited for his mind to settle. He thought that if he sat long enough, it would become blank. Instead, his mind was crowded with thoughts. Soon he started to worry about failing the task he'd been set. He tried to force the thoughts out of his mind, but that just produced more thoughts. He shouted at them to go away, but the words echoed noisily in the cave. He jumped up and down, held his breath, shook his head. Nothing seemed to work. He'd never known such a bombardment of thoughts in his life. At the end of the day, he climbed back down, completely dispirited, wondering what his teacher's response would be. Perhaps he'd be dismissed as a failure, unsuitable for further training. But the teacher just burst out laughing at the tale of his mental and physical gymnastics. "Very good. You have tried really hard and done well," he said. "Tomorrow you should go back to the cave, sit from dawn to dusk, having nothing but thoughts. Think of anything you like all day long, but allow no gaps to occur between your thoughts." The novice was really pleased. This would be easy. He was bound to succeed. After all, having thoughts is what had been happening to him all day. The next day saw him climbing up with confidence to his cave and taking his seat. After a little while, he realized that all was not well. His thoughts started to slow down. Occasionally, a pleasant thought would come to mind and he would decide to follow it for a while, but soon it dried up. He tried to think grand thoughts, philosophical speculations, to worry about the state of the universe, anything. He started to run low on things to think about and even got a little bored. Where had all his thinking gone? Then he noticed gaps in his thinking. Oh dear, this was what he'd been told to avoid. Another failure. At the end of the day, he felt pretty wretched. He'd failed again. He climbed down the mountain and went to find his teacher, who burst out laughing again. "Congratulations! Wonderful! Now you know how to practice perfectly." He didn't understand why the teacher was so pleased. What on earth had he learned? The teacher was pleased because the novice was now ready to recognize something of real significance. You cannot force the mind, and if you try to, you won't like what comes of it. There's no need to climb to the top of a mountain to come to this important conclusion on your own. You might like to try this simple experiment right now. If you want to, pause this program for a minute and try to think anything you like, but try not to think of a white bear. 1 minute. Make sure that during that minute, no thought or image of that animal occurs to you. What did you find? Most people find they can't completely suppress thoughts of white bears. Professor Daniel Wegner and colleagues have shown that when we try to suppress thoughts like this, what we resist persists. Our attempts to force the mind can rebound in exactly the opposite direction from the one we want. Not only is it difficult to suppress the thought in the first place, but later, if we're allowed to think of white bears, the thought of them comes up more often than if we'd not been trying to suppress them earlier. If this is true for neutral thoughts and images such as bears, it's not difficult to imagine what happens when we try to suppress negative thoughts, images, and memories of a very personal nature. If we've experienced persistent low mood in the past, we're likely to put a lot of mental effort into keeping negative thinking at bay. Research by Drs. Wenzlaff and Bates and colleagues shows that this can work for a little while, but at a huge cost. Those who put more effort into keeping negatives out of mind end up being more depressed than those who do not. How can we possibly steady and calm the mind if force is so ineffective? All is not lost. The mind has a natural mechanism for supporting sustained, vigilant, engaged attention. The question is, how can we tap into it? One way is to give ourselves the gentle challenge of intentionally focusing and refocusing our attention on a single object. Historically, many different objects of attention have been used, from a gently flickering candle flame to a sound such as Om repeated silently in the mind. Research has revealed that intentionally focusing on just one object in this way can steady the mind by activating the brain networks corresponding to the chosen focus of attention, and then at the same time inhibiting the brain networks corresponding to competing demands for attention, without any need for force. It's as if the brain lights up the selected object while also dimming down the unselected objects. To take advantage of these basic natural processes, we do actually need to make an effort, but it is a certain kind of gentle effort. We direct the spotlight of our attention onto our chosen object, and then refocus the spotlight on the object over and over again whenever we notice it has drifted away. This is very different from the goal-oriented striving that tries to steady the mind by forcing certain thoughts into the mind or pushing other thoughts out, or by erecting a barrier to the entry of unwanted thoughts and feelings. It is a graceful and gentle kind of effort that signals a shift to a mental mode that supports curiosity, interest, and a tendency to explore and investigate. It is tapping into the mind's capacity to approach rather than avoid situations. Traditionally, this harnessing of the mind's own natural capacities for calm and clarity is nicely captured by the image of a glass of muddy water. As long as we keep stirring the water, it'll stay opaque and cloudy. But if we have the patience to simply wait, the mud will eventually settle at the bottom of the glass, leaving clear, pure water above. In the same way, our attempts to steady, calm, or control our mind often merely stir things up and make everything less clear. But we can get out of our own way and stop contributing to the cloudiness of the mind by encouraging it to alight and dwell on a single object of attention for a time. When we intentionally let go of our urge to force things to be a particular way, the mind naturally settles all by itself, leaving us both calmer and clearer. From ancient times, the breath has served as a convenient object for this purpose. The intention is to attend as best we can to the constantly changing pattern of physical sensations as the breath moves in and moves out of the body. You might like to try this first mindfulness of breathing practice now if you're in a position to do so. If not, try it a little later. Guidance for this practice is given on track 4 of the guided practice session. It's remarkable and inspiring to think that the practice of focusing on the breath in this way has been followed somewhere in the world every day for at least the last 2,500 years. It provides a wonderful foundation for the practice of meditation. Our breathing is with us wherever we go. We can't leave home without it. It is always available to help us reconnect our attention to the present moment. Learning to focus, refocus, and refocus our attention on the breath offers a great way to learn how we can be fully present right here, right now. Because we can attend to the movements of the breath only in the very moment in which they are arising, attending to the breath holds us in the present and provides a vital anchor line with which we can reconnect to the here and now when we recognize that our mind has traveled far away to the there and then. Maintaining a focus of awareness on the breath as the mind is pulled away by thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations, or external distractions is not easy. But it may seem less of a struggle when we are able to see such fluctuations in the mind as just what the mind does, similar to waves on the surface of water. If we see these mind waves as both natural and inevitable, then the very going away and coming back of our attention can be seen as the heart of the practice, not a lapse or a deviation or a distraction from it. For such goings and comings can teach us precisely what we need to learn, to recognize when we have drifted into doing mode, to disengage from any doing if we choose, and to enter and dwell in being. This tendency of the mind to wander is perfectly normal. The fact that our thoughts seem to proliferate without end doesn't at all reflect an inability to meditate on our part. In fact, this recognition of the ever-changing nature of our own thought stream and how labile our attention is marks the beginning of meditative awareness. All the same, it's very easy to become fidgety in the face of the unrelenting torrent of thoughts and think that we must be doing something wrong. It's only natural to think that the work of meditation is being interrupted when the mind wanders here, there, and everywhere. Yet, each moment in which the mind takes off gives us one more opportunity to become more aware of when we are slipping or have already slipped out of the being mode and back into the doing mode. It allows us to become more aware of the thoughts, feelings, and body sensations that carry us away in those moments, and to cultivate the skills of releasing ourselves from the doing mode and returning to the more mindful being mode. This is why the instructions for the mindfulness of breathing practice encourage us to congratulate ourselves at first when we notice our awareness is no longer on the breath. In that very moment, it can be helpful to note briefly what is on our mind and name what is going on. So we could say to ourselves, for example, thinking, thinking, or planning, planning, or worrying, worrying. Whatever the content of the thought or impulse, the task is the same: to note what is on our mind in this moment, and then to gently escort our awareness back to our breathing, renewing our contact with the in-breath or the out-breath, whichever is happening when we come back. Just like anything else, meditation can all too easily be taken on in a doing mode of mind. Perhaps having experienced the turbulence in the mind abating a bit on its own on a few occasions, we may find ourselves expecting it to happen every time we sit down to meditate. We can't help asking ourselves, If we experienced calmness last time, why not now? Unwittingly, we have slipped into becoming goal-oriented in the meditation practice. It's very common to have a feeling that we've got it in certain moments, that this must be what I am really supposed to be feeling, only to feel at other moments that we've lost it, maybe even in the very next moment. This is not a problem at all, especially if we can be aware of it and smile inwardly at the unending antics of our own doing mind. But once we have felt a sense of peace, even for the briefest of moments during a session of practice, the doing mind's habitual tendency to look for goals naturally kicks in. It generates the expectation or hope that we will have the same experience in the next moment or the next time we do the practice. And if that experience doesn't repeat itself according to our expectations, how easily we can feel disappointment and irritation. And even if we recognize the expectation and the irritation, we can still easily feel critical of ourselves for getting irritated. We may even wind up thinking that experienced meditators never feel irritated as we generate endless fantasies and idealizations about meditation. If irritation arises in any moment, we can simply note it as irritation, labeling it as a way of acknowledging it for what it is. Then we can gently direct our attention back to the breath. So, when practicing mindfulness, if we slip back into the doing mindset, thinking that the meditation is not working or that we are doing it wrong, it can be very helpful to remind ourselves that cultivating mindfulness of breathing or any other object of attention is fundamentally a practice of beginning again and again and again, each time we are caught up and carried away by the wanderings of the mind. Through repeated practice, we come to see that each in-breath is a new beginning, and each out-breath a fresh letting go. We begin to see that the shift from one mode of mind to another can be virtually instantaneous. In this way, the practice is always giving us the chance to begin again in this moment with this breath. If our mind wanders 100 times during a period of formal practice, then we simply and good-naturedly bring it back 100 times. Eventually we may come to see what this practice is actually asking of us, to recognize and accept that our mind does indeed have a life of its own, and that it will inevitably wander away from whatever object of attention we set for ourselves, in this case the breath. And we may come to see that we can gently escort our attention back to the breath every time this happens. Ultimately, we come to see that we can cradle all of it in awareness with a light and gentle touch, including the wandering of the mind with all its obsessions and its struggles. Just that. And that is a lot. Perhaps everything. We are beginning a graceful transition from unawareness to awareness. A striking thing about the things we say to convey our emotional states is how often they refer to the body. "That really tickled me," we say, or "my heart soared," or "my heart sank," or "my heart stopped," or "I just feel sick about what happened yesterday," or "I've butterflies in my stomach." We use these metaphors for good reason. The body and its infinite sensations are the repository of and the messengers for emotion. Joy, pleasure or amusement can actually feel something like a tickle. Of course, the heart doesn't move around the body when we feel uplifted or beaten down, but some real physical sensations do occur that are captured by those descriptions. The point is that the body has a lot to tell us about how we are feeling, not just at peak moments, but all the time. Yet we don't often hear its messages with any degree of wisdom, because we are often too busy reacting to them in ways that immediately trigger a cascade of thoughts and judgments. The challenge here is whether we can, in the being mode, actually open to, know, and befriend the very sensations and feelings we are experiencing in the body, whatever they may be, and accept them with a new receptivity, because they're actually part of the sensory landscape of our own body in this moment. If we can listen with this kind of openness, we will discover powerful new ways to be with what we are experiencing in any moment, whether it is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. We sometimes say, "I feel the weight of the world on my shoulders." We may be more familiar with that sensation than many others, and certainly more often than we'd like. This is how many of us feel when depressed or unhappy, as if a huge burden has been placed on the body, making every normal action an effort. As we discussed earlier, physical sensations, thoughts, feelings, and behaviour all work together to create a state of depression. Let's focus for a moment on the way that sensations in the body can trigger negative thinking. Consider how you might feel upon waking up when you've been feeling down for a stretch of time. Perhaps the first thing you notice is how heavy and achy your body is. Maybe you don't even feel rested after a night's sleep. Your energy level is so low that you actually feel more tired than when you went to bed the night before. In addition to these sensory aspects of your experience, you have thoughts, perhaps, like, "I don't think I'm going to get anything done today," or "another wasted day." And these thoughts may waft through your mind. Perhaps such thoughts lead you to feel frustrated and sad, disappointed with yourself. Eventually, you try to get out of bed, but feel so heavy and tired that you drop back from the very effort. Maybe you try to put the thoughts of how listless you feel out of your mind. Maybe you're fed up with these daily battles with lack of energy. You say to yourself, "I've got to get up and get going. This is doing me no good at all." When you finally do get up, the listless feeling may well pass as you busy yourself with the day's activities. But perhaps these morning struggles seem to be an increasing burden day by day by day. This scenario illustrates how easily we can get trapped in a cycle in which our thoughts about our body sensations can drag us down into depression. But what if we could open ourselves to the full panoply of direct sensory experience instead of simply getting carried away by the mind's reactions in thought and emotion to that experience? If we can come to know sensations and feelings directly, befriending the sensory landscape of our own body, we will have a powerful new way to experience and be in wiser relationship to every moment, including that moment when we first wake up. The machinery that sets the cycle of unhappiness in motion may operate so smoothly that we don't even detect its workings. But that doesn't mean that it's an unstoppable juggernaut. Every link that keeps the machine going, body to thoughts, thoughts to feelings, feelings to body, and so forth, is an opportunity to redirect the sequence. The cycle can be broken simply by bringing mindful awareness to its links, and, in particular, to the body. This may be hard to believe. Truthfully, the only way to confirm it is through your own experience. If right now you're thinking that you're already aware of your fatigue, too aware of it in fact, it may be helpful to recall that mindfulness is not just about paying more attention, but rather about cultivating a different, wiser kind of attention. As we have seen, in doing mode, we see the world only indirectly through the veil of our thinking and labelling. If we think about our bodies in the usual way from the perspective of our heads, then, as soon as we feel listless on awaking, our mind fills with ideas about the body, what is going on in our lives, everything. This way of paying attention will just make things worse. If, instead, we begin to focus on the body from the perspective of being mode, we open to a direct sensing of the body itself. Moment by moment, we can become aware of body sensations, but now in a new way, a way that does not keep us so stuck obsessing in our thoughts about how we are feeling in the body. This can help our feelings of sluggishness to fade on their own because we're no longer feeding them with incessant negative thinking. In the process, we shift from feeling powerless in their presence to having viable ways to be in relationship to them or anything else that arises. As we've said, doing mode and its thinking patterns tend to obscure the experiential quality of being mode. For this reason, mindfulness training involves extensive practice in getting in touch moment by moment with the direct experience of life unfolding. The body is a great place to start to cultivate this new way of being, and we do so by learning a practice called the body scan. The body scan is a lying down meditation practice we introduce in the very first session of our mindfulness programs, and then we ask people to practice it daily for at least 2 weeks on their own at home. The body scan guides us in paying attention directly and systematically to each part of the body in turn. It's sometimes challenging to bring attention to all the varied regions of the body. For that reason, we use the breath to carry awareness into each part of the body, imagining or sensing that the breath could actually move throughout the body, bringing with it a direct, experiential sensing and knowing of the region of the body we are focusing on. You might like to do this exercise yourself right now, using the instructions on track 2 of the guided practice session. Or you might prefer to do it a little later if you can't do it immediately. As we see from the instructions for the body scan, the point of this practice is to be aware of your body as it is. It's not to achieve a state of relaxation. And yet, deep states of relaxation often emerge, so much so that people sometimes find themselves falling asleep. Why might we find it relaxing, even though we're not purposely trying to relax? When we cultivate mindfulness, by paying attention to the detailed pattern of sensations in a particular part of the body in any and every moment, we have a vivid and accessible object to anchor our attention in each moment. Just being able to focus on one thing at a time allows the mind to settle, and we can experience a sense of calm. That said, it can be unhelpful for people to see the body scan as a form of relaxation training, for the simple reason that it encourages the old habits of mind to start up again. As with the breathing meditation, we can inadvertently turn discovery into expectation. We end up making relaxation the purpose and goal of the body scan, wanting to experience relaxation so badly that it escapes us, like a handful of dry sand grasped so tightly that it runs through the fingers. So what can we do? If we find the body scan peaceful and calming, we can simply be aware of these feelings. To experience feelings is to know that they come and they go. They arise and they pass away. The point is to be here for them, to be directly aware of them as they are, whether pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and even if they are barely noticeable. Working like this is the basis of a profound insight. When we stop trying to attain pleasant feelings, such feelings are more likely to emerge by themselves. With this insight may come another profound lesson. We already have the capacity to experience peace and happiness deep within ourselves. We simply have to learn how to skillfully get out of our own way. Getting out of our own way allows the deep reservoirs of peace and happiness within us to reveal themselves so that we may gain more ready access to them. For those of us who have been fighting unhappiness for much of our lives, this can be an enormously liberating change. Whether we've come to expect the relaxation or calm that may accompany the body scan, or we tend to scold ourselves for letting our minds wander, it's easy to attach goals to meditation and start to think of a particular session we've had as good or bad, or as working or not working. Because of the aversion we feel for unpleasant emotion, we may also be tempted, if we felt impatient throughout, restless, uncomfortable, itchy or irritable, cold or hot or in pain, to say we had a bad meditation. We may never want to do the body scan again because obviously the meditation didn't work. Something was wrong. Maybe we blame the recording or the teacher or the method, or we think of ourselves as failures. And if we also imagine that meanwhile other people are having wonderful experiences with the body scan, we will just have one more reason to think we're failing. There's no such thing as failing at meditation, as long as we are mindful of our experience, whatever it is. In fact, this is precisely why the body scan is so powerful. It gives us opportunity after opportunity to rest in or return to the being mode with its direct experiential knowing, even in the presence of strong emotion, thoughts or sensations. Like all the other meditation practices, the body scan becomes a laboratory for our own learning and growing. Learning not to get stuck in self-perpetuating cycles of preoccupation and unhappiness. Growing into a greater intimacy and comfort with ourselves. The body scan is aimed at freeing us from the suffering and mental anguish that arises through wanting things to be different from the way they are in this moment. In the body scan, as in life itself, we are in a much stronger, freer position if we can let go of the desire to feel calm or enlightened or at peace or filled with joy, and instead can learn to be present with whatever we are feeling right now. So let's return to where we began, feeling an unpleasant heaviness and fatigue on waking in the morning. For many of us, dealing with this feeling can be quite difficult. But if we have practiced the body scan for even a few days, we will have begun relating to the body as it is, and not as we may wish it were. So, on waking, how might we approach the situation differently? We will be able to recognize the early warning signs of what might become a vicious cycle and begin to practice inhabiting the being mode of mind. We will focus our attention directly on our body sensations and rest in the awareness of them as they are. This allows us to be with the uncomfortable sensations without trying to avoid them or making them worse through thinking about them. Even in the very earliest stages of the body scan practice, this alternative to doing mind can have an impact on something as common and mundane as early morning weariness. That sense of heaviness is greatly increased by negative thoughts. But mindfulness in the same situation, bringing a gentle and compassionate awareness to the body sensations themselves without trying to change them, and letting go of thoughts about them or about ourselves or about anything, can be immensely energizing. Once we have some experience with the body scan, we can bring this kind of awareness to bear in a matter of moments. We can even scan the body for one in-breath and one out-breath, or just breathe with the body as a whole for 5 minutes or so, or even a minute or two before getting out of bed. It might just change our whole day. As we've already seen, it's completely understandable that we make an enemy of our emotions if we've experienced painful moods and feelings in the past. How then can we reconnect with our feelings? The attempt to avoid our own emotions, our thoughts, our feelings, and our body sensations is called experiential avoidance, avoidance of our own experience. Not surprisingly, it can become a habit. But pretending some feeling isn't actually here is like hearing a strange noise from your car engine and dealing with it by turning up the volume on the car radio. It works pretty well to blank out the noise, but it's not too effective in preventing the engine from seizing up 10 miles down the road. If we try to wall off bodily sensations, thoughts and feelings that are part and parcel of our emotional experience, then, psychologically, our mental engines are highly likely to seize up as well. Unless we are aware of them, unpleasant feelings will directly and indirectly influence our attitudes and judgments in ways that only perpetuate our unhappiness. Unless we are aware, there's the problem. When tuning out has become a habit, how can we learn to tune back in without becoming overwhelmed? It is helpful to know that an aspect of our own inner experience can help. We call it the internal barometer. Let me explain. When looking for a new place to live, have you ever come across a house or an apartment that sounded perfect? It has the number of rooms you need, excellent amenities, great neighbourhood. You think it's great until you visit it. As soon as you walk through the door, you know that it's not the place for you. You may not be able to say why. It's just an intuition. It's conscious, you're very aware of it, yet it's not expressible in words. Our feelings may have many dimensions, but underneath and underpinning them all is a single scale in the mind that simply registers experience as positive, neutral, or negative. It's as if this capacity functions as an internal barometer. Just as a real barometer provides a continuous readout of atmospheric pressure, this internal barometer provides a readout of the internal atmosphere of our experience in each moment. But just as we need to read the barometer to gain information about the weather, we will need to read, and if necessary learn how to read, this internal barometer by becoming more aware of what we are really feeling from moment to moment. For example, if a fleeting memory makes us feel suddenly sad or unhappy, we may not need to know what aspect of the memory triggered the emotion. The memory itself, or the emotion it evokes, will be registered as unpleasant. And it is this gut sense of unpleasantness that fuels the chain reaction that ensues. This might once have been the start of a downward spiral, but it doesn't have to be. For we can transform a cascade of reactions into a series of choice points. For one thing, by bringing a friendly, non-judgmental awareness right in close to the body sensations that accompany the unhappiness, we can immediately make wiser use of the information implicit in the sensations and feelings themselves. For many of us, it may be difficult at first to differentiate between that first perception of an unpleasant quality within the experience and the downstream reaction of aversion, because they're likely to be experienced as a fused whole. But by practicing meditations that are specifically focused on refining our awareness of the body, such as the body scan, it can become easier to detect the unpleasant quality in the feeling before it triggers aversion. Finally, and little by little, we may begin to notice that they are distinct. The unpleasantness registered first, followed by the get me out of here reaction of aversion, which is also then registered as unpleasant, and so the cycle continues. It is helpful to know that the most easily recognized expressions of aversion in the body are feelings of contraction in the shoulders or lower back, a tightening of the forehead, a clenching of the jaw, and a tightening of the belly. We have these fight or flight reactions whether we're trying to escape from a tiger or from our own inner feelings. However, we often stop noticing these aversive physiological reactions when the tiger is inside of us and has been with us for quite some time with no evident plans to vacate the premises. So, taking it one step at a time, how can we become more aware of the ensemble we have described, the body sensations that will reveal the fusion of the initial barometer reading unpleasant, and the cascade of habitual reactions that follow it. We've already started, for there is an infinite number of opportunities each time we practice the body scan. Can we be aware of feelings of unpleasantness or pleasantness and their immediate manifestation as sensations in the body, moment by moment? As we continue in that practice, we naturally become more familiar with feelings expressed not only in the particular regions of the body, but also in a sense of the body as a whole, held in awareness as we do at the end of each body scan. I want to say more now about this business of aversion and avoidance. And I want to refer to an example of an experiment that some psychologists did some years ago. It's a fascinating experiment. You might remember the puzzle books that we got when we were children. There were the connect the dots puzzles and the find the differences puzzles. And sometimes there'd be a maze, a labyrinth, and our task would be to draw a way out without taking the pencil off the page. Well, some years ago, psychologists used a similar maze puzzle in an intriguing experiment with college students. A cartoon mouse was shown trapped inside a picture of a maze, and the task was to help the mouse find the way out. There were two different versions of the task. One was positive, approach-oriented. The other was negative or avoidance-oriented. In the positive condition, there was a piece of Swiss cheese lying outside the maze in front of a mouse hole. In the negative condition, the maze was exactly the same, but instead of the Swiss cheese feast at the finish, an owl hovered above the maze, ready to swoop down and capture the mouse in its talons at any moment. The maze takes less than 2 minutes to complete, and all the students who took part in the experiment solved their maze. But the contrast in the after effects of working on different versions of the maze was striking. When the participants later took a test of creativity, those who had helped their mouse avoid the owl turned in scores that were 50% lower than the scores of the students who'd helped their mouse find the cheese. The state of mind elicited by attending to the owl had resulted in a lingering sense of caution, avoidance, and vigilance for things going wrong. This mind state, in turn, weakened creativity, closed down options, and reduced the student's flexibility in responding to the next task. This experiment tells us something very important. The same action, even something as slight as solving a simple maze puzzle, has different consequences depending on whether it is done to move towards something we welcome or to avoid something negative. When we move towards something we welcome, it activates the brain's approach system. If we're doing something to avoid something negative, it's activating the brain's avoidance system. In the maze experiment, aversion was triggered by something as minor as the sight of a cartoon owl. It led to reductions in exploratory creative behaviours. This is dramatic evidence that the avoidance system can narrow the focus of our lives even when triggered by a purely symbolic threat. Moreover, this experiment points to the critical importance of the kind of motivation that we bring to the cultivation of mindfulness in our practice. If we can infuse our attention to our bodily experience with the approach qualities of interest, curiosity, warmth, and goodwill, then not only will we be in greater touch with sensations and feelings in each moment, we also will be directly countering any effects of aversion and avoidance that may be present. As with so much of what we're learning to do, cultivating wholesome and kind intention and motivation is just as much a part of the meditation practice as learning how to focus our attention in particular ways. In the practice that follows, which builds on the work of refining bodily awareness that we started in the body scan, we bring our attention to the range of sensations and feelings that arise in our bodies as we go through a 10-minute sequence of gentle standing yoga stretches. You might like to pause this program and do this practice now, or as soon as you can, following the instructions on track 3 of the guided practice session. Please note before you begin that in the practice of mindful movement, you must be sure to take special care if you have any physical problems that limit your movement right now. Consult your physician or physical therapist if you're unsure. The mouse in the maze experiment reminds us of the crucial importance of the spirit in which we approach this practice. We invite ourselves to explore what is going on in our body in the same way that we investigated eating the raisin, bringing an open-hearted awareness to whatever is available to be experienced from moment to moment. Unpleasant sensations will certainly arise at times and in various places in the body, especially while doing mindful yoga. These now become perfect opportunities for exploring how unpleasantness is related to aversion. So the challenge of each moment in the standing yoga is to purposefully experience the body just as it is, moment by moment, with openness and interest, as if for the first time. And that includes sensing and gently exploring its limits in any given stretch or posture. Let's say we deliberately hold a stretch or a posture a little longer than feels comfortable and begin to experience some discomfort in the shoulders or back. The challenge is to put out the welcome mat for these sensations without pushing beyond anything, as we hold them in awareness and recognize their unpleasant quality. Can we notice the impulse to instantly label the sensations as pain or the whole experience as pure torture? By turning toward discomfort and unpleasantness, and by intentionally embracing them in awareness when they do arise, we are expanding the heart qualities of openness and goodwill in ourselves. By cultivating awareness in this way, we are weakening our tendency to avoid internal experiences we don't like. At the same time, we're also weakening our unconscious reliance on the doing mode, which, when fear-based, only entangles us in persistent unhappiness. Some people find it helpful to hone and deepen their awareness by silently inquiring, "What is this?" as they attend to their experience. As with all the other practices, the awareness we cultivate in the mindful yoga is available to us in all our moments. Using the body to ground us in awareness during the course of the day can be as simple as becoming mindful of our posture or of any movement, large or small, or of the contact we are making with the ground or with the chair or whatever we're supported by. This doesn't actually take any more time than being out of touch with our body and moving automatically and without awareness. Say we're reaching for something. We're doing it anyway. There's nothing extra we have to do. We simply bring attention to the body sensations in the region that is moving and the regions that are not moving. We can train ourselves to be here, right now, inhabiting the body with full awareness. Whatever is going on in our mind or body, our internal barometer is always here for us if we choose to read it. Doing so gives us far greater choice in terms of what happens in the very next moment. This in itself adds a new degree of freedom to our relationship to our interior experience. In addition to using the practice of mindful yoga to ground us in the body, we can deepen our awareness in other ways that can help us tune in to the signals of our internal barometer. One very powerful way is to extend the practice of mindfulness of the breath to include a sense of the body as a whole. You might like to experiment with this practice before listening further, following the instructions on track 5 of the guided practice session. As with all the practices we are exploring, remember to bring the same quality of open-heartedness to each moment as best you can, directly sensing body sensations and feelings as sensations and feelings. New dimensions of the experiences of both physical and emotional pain and suffering, and the potential for embracing them and understanding them differently, become available to us when we give ourselves over to the present moment and let go of all thoughts of the future and the past at just those moments of highest intensity. You might experiment with this shift in motivation and awareness whenever physical or emotional intensity arises in the meditation practice. You don't have to jump into the pool all at once. Just getting one toe in the water for even the briefest of moments, if that's all you can manage, can be profoundly revealing and potentially healing. The practice of expanding our attention around the breath to include a wider awareness of the body as a whole in the sitting meditation will provide many opportunities to refine the skills of breathing into that we described when we did the body scan. Breathing into can offer a powerful antidote to experiential avoidance. The breath can be seen as a vehicle carrying a gentle yet penetrating awareness into the region of intensity. We sense or imagine the breath as it moves into the body, continuing its journey until it enters the very core of the region of intensity, carrying awareness with it. As well as breathing into, we can also breathe with our experience. By including an awareness of the breath in the background as we focus on any experience, we can steady the mind and so attend more easily to our actual experience in any moment. For an example, if you were to put on a piece of music right now, you'd probably find that after focusing your attention on the music for a while, your mind would begin to wander. As an experiment, now or some other time, you might like to see if you can pay attention to the music and also focus in the background on the breath as it moves in and out of your body. It may take a while to strike the right balance between the primary focus, the music in the foreground, and the steadying influence of the breath in the background. But many find the effort worthwhile because it offers us a very versatile way to steady the mind in complex and difficult situations. In particular, it can be an invaluable ally and support in our intention to expand the focus of awareness to the whole domain of felt bodily experience when, as may often happen, this requires us to turn toward and face intense physical sensations and unpleasant feelings. There are many different ways in which we can reconnect with ignored or pushed away aspects of ourselves. By sampling a range of mindfulness practices over time, we can ultimately each find our own unique way back to befriending and learning from our full range of emotions. In that spirit, let's try something that might help us be more mindful and more accepting of our sometimes elusive feelings. Over the next few hours, be on the lookout for even the smallest moments when you register an experience as pleasant or unpleasant. Keep a record of what was actually going on in the moment in question, with particular attention to the interplay of feelings, thoughts, and physical sensations during each event. Recording what you were actually experiencing in each instance can be very valuable. Making a commitment to be aware of pleasant or unpleasant feelings in any moment requires tuning in, the exact opposite of experiential avoidance. The point of recognizing when situations evoke unpleasant feelings, or when our contracted bodies tell us that we have already reacted with aversion, is so we can then learn to respond more skillfully. Can we learn how to be with an unpleasant feeling in a way that is not going to get us trapped in obsessive preoccupation, endless cycles of rumination, and thus persistent unhappiness and depression? Can we transform our very relationship to our emotions? It is to this possibility that we now turn. Anyone who starts out on an adventure knows that there will be obstacles along the way that may seem insurmountable. Climbers train for months, knowing that gentle slopes will give way to large overhangs. Every climb has one overhang that can seem impossible when confronted. We have now reached just such a critical juncture in our quest to reverse the cycle of unhappiness. The challenge before us at this point is to see if we can be with our unwanted emotions without making them worse. befriending emotions that we've viewed as the enemy for so long, may run counter to all of our self-preservation instincts. But when it comes right down to it, what else is there to do? The alternative so far has been to struggle and suffer. Perhaps it's time to explore another path. We're not claiming that cultivating mindfulness in the face of a tendency towards sadness, low mood and depressive rumination is easy, but it is doable. What is more, it draws on what is deepest and best in us. The key here is to uncouple our experience of unpleasant feelings from the knee-jerk reaction of aversion that habitually follows it. Or, if we are already caught up in aversion, to free ourselves from its grip. But how can we do this? We've already seen that whenever something unpleasant arises, the systems in the brain that warn us about potential threats are activated. And we know how we'd normally react, trying to distract ourselves, for example, perhaps turning on the television. But we also know that the worries may keep intruding on our consciousness sooner or later, with the television on or off, the disturbing thoughts and feelings come flooding back. Here is that critical moment. If, paradoxically, we can turn and face whatever it is that we are finding scary, difficult, or depressing, rather than perpetually distracting ourselves to no avail, we are actually doing something very wise. That's because we're still doing what the brain wants us to do, giving high priority attention to the matter at hand. It's just that we are no longer giving it attention in the old, doing way. We are approaching the moment, whatever it is, however it is, not by reacting, but rather by responding. And we do this by bringing an open, spacious, and affectionate attention to the feeling in the moment as it expresses itself in the body. Now we are in relationship to the alarm in a new way, one that provides us with a viable alternative to endlessly thinking about it. And focusing on how we experience it in the body is aided enormously by connecting our awareness of the breath in that very moment with whatever the unpleasant experience is, what we were calling a gesture of breathing with. This breathing with whatever arises in and of itself tends to steady the mind. As we learned, it involves expanding the awareness of our breath sensations to include awareness of other relevant sensations we're experiencing in the body. Practicing in this way includes intentionally breathing into any area of painful or uncomfortable sensations, exploring their edges and any changes in intensity, and allowing our awareness to simply hold it all. In such a moment, we have an opportunity to recognize any signs of aversion manifested in the body as contraction. Tying awareness of the breath to awareness of other sensations in the body makes the breath a vehicle for the movement of awareness just as it was in the body scan. But since this awareness can also hold thoughts and feelings, if those should arise, the field of awareness can readily recognize and accommodate them as well, without having to do anything at all. The awareness itself does all the work. We can start to learn this new way to relate to unpleasant sensations and feelings through the mindful yoga stretches described in the guided practice session. You may like to pause this program for a few minutes and do some of these stretches following along with track 3 of the guided practice session. As best you can, approach these stretches in the spirit that we now describe. We almost inevitably encounter at least some degree of bodily discomfort in key places when we practice stretching through mindful yoga. This is what makes this practice such an effective vehicle for learning how to approach difficult and unwanted moments and experiences with greater acceptance, curiosity, gentleness, and kindness. What is more, the new skills we develop in working with even a mild degree of physical discomfort can be directly applied later to situations of emotional discomfort, however intense they may be. Let's imagine we have our hands above our heads. We're stretching upward with our whole bodies, and it is beginning to feel uncomfortable in our shoulders and upper arms. One way to react, we might call this the avoidance option, is to back off as soon as we feel any discomfort, perhaps immediately lowering our arms. Another possibility, we could call it the unkind option, is to grit our teeth, tell ourselves we just have to put up with the increasing pain and discomfort and not make a fuss, as if this were the aim of the practice. We would then put even more effort into pushing ourselves to stretch further. But there is also a third option, one that strikes a balance between withdrawing at the first sign of discomfort and forcing ourselves to meet some self-designated standard of endurance. This mindful option calls for approaching the situation in a spirit of gentle nurturing, using the stretch to extend our ways of relating to discomfort. We direct our attention right into the area of discomfort as best we can, using the breath as a vehicle to bring awareness right into this region, as we did in the body scan. With a gentle curiosity, we then explore what we find here. Physical sensations and feelings coming and going, changing and fluxing. We sense them directly, perhaps focusing on any changes in intensity over time. The idea is not to hold a posture until it is painful. It is rather to experience the limit of the movement in any particular stretch or posture, and then to linger here, without forcing or pushing through strong sensations. All the while, we keep our attention on the sensations and feelings themselves as best we can. We focus on the physical qualities of the sensations, on any sense of tightness, holding, burning, trembling, or shaking. Breathing with the sensations as best we can. We allow our thoughts about what these feelings mean to simply come and go in awareness. And we can play with the intensity of sensation by actually varying the stretch itself, experimenting with working the edge of our discomfort and our acceptance, exploring for ourselves just how the body responds directly to every tiny change we introduce. This approach gives us some sense of being able to modulate the intensity of unpleasant sensations. This is also a way we can be gentle and nurturing toward ourselves while still learning how to relate to whatever arises in a new way. We don't try to force things beyond our limit of the moment. Mindful stretching provides a very useful training ground for exploring new, counterintuitive ways to respond to discomfort. It also offers in itself an invaluable way to shift modes of mind when we feel ourselves sliding into unhappiness. We can put on track 3 of the guided practice session, for instance, and perhaps recover our clarity of mind just by attending to the body's movements and sensations. When our mood has deteriorated, when we're finding it difficult to concentrate, it's helpful to be able to ground ourselves in awareness of the tangible sensations that arise as we stretch and twist and work with our bodies. This gentle, yet always challenging physical activity can also have a direct enlivening and arousing effect that may cut through the lethargy that can rear its head as unhappiness deepens. In fact, it is very difficult to remain sad or anxious while doing yoga in a mindful way. We might run into a certain degree of discomfort in the sitting meditation as well, simply by being still for an extended period of time, even more so when sitting cross-legged on the floor. One or both knees, the back, neck or shoulders might start to ache, and the ache can intensify with time, sometimes quite dramatically. Recall that the sitting meditation invites us first to let our attention settle on the breath sensations themselves, and then gradually expanding the field of awareness once it is relatively stable to include a sense of the body as a whole or any particular regions that might be giving rise to intense sensations. So here is another effective opportunity, just as in the mindful yoga, to develop our ability to work the edge, befriending our experience in the body by turning toward and opening to whatever is present, even if our initial reaction is strong aversion. When our attention is repeatedly drawn to such uncomfortable sensations, we can include those areas of greatest intensity within the field of awareness and experience them moment by moment just as they are, even if it is just for a few moments at first. Here we are again, working the edge, gently and lovingly zeroing in on our boundaries and limits by moving into and embracing the sensations themselves, until we sense that we have reached our limit for the moment. Then we intentionally and caringly back off and shift our attention from the region of greatest intensity, ready to return when we have gathered and regrouped our resources. We might do this in a number of ways. One possibility is to shift attention within the general region of intensity, so that rather than focusing on the region of maximum intensity, we focus on an area of lesser intensity. Another possibility is to breathe with the discomfort, holding awareness of the intense sensations together with awareness of the breath in the background. Or, if the intensity is becoming overwhelming, we can shift the focus of attention away from that region entirely and focus attention exclusively on the breath. And remembering that we always have the option of moving the body intentionally, of shifting our posture during the sitting meditation practice if the intensity becomes too great. This is an act of kindness and intelligence in itself, and it's not a measure of failure. And we can be aware of shifting our posture too, so that there is a continuity of awareness, regardless of how we are responding to the intensity of sensation. The point here is that the practice itself allows us to discover different ways to stay in relationship to our inner experience, even when it is unpleasant and difficult. It reminds us that we don't have to throw ourselves in all at once. It's more like dipping just the big toe in the water to test the temperature. What we are learning here is the power of awareness to contain whatever arises without our needing to push it away or try to escape from it. This learning can be applied to any other intense experience of physical or emotional pain. We discover that we can take care of ourselves by actually embracing and befriending whatever we are feeling in awareness. An awareness suffused with qualities of kindness and a gentle openness and interest in what is arising within us, whatever it is. Unpleasant emotions are invariably accompanied by sensations and feelings in the body. If we gently focus our attention right into these areas of intense sensation and discomfort, we bring about both immediate and longer-term effects. We immediately short-circuit any unhelpful avoidance tendencies of the mind. We also immediately disrupt the automatic links among body sensations, feelings, and thoughts that perpetuate vicious cycles and downward mood spirals. In the longer run, we develop more skillful ways of being in relationship to uncomfortable experiences, rather than seeing them as bad and threatening things, a view that triggers avoidance and gets us stuck in suffering. We begin to see unpleasant experiences for what they are, passing mental events, bundles of bodily sensations, feelings, and thoughts. As best we can, we greet them with a sense of interest and curiosity rather than with a sense of unease, hatred, and dread. We welcome them in as they are already here anyway. In the MBCT program, we have specifically designed a practice for investigating the texture of emotionally challenging situations. The practice helps us explore and cultivate more skillful responses in those critical moments. We start by deliberately inviting a difficult scenario or circumstance to come to mind. We then work with it in the body, bringing awareness to it, breathing into it, and discovering a wider space within which it might exist. We suggest that you settle by focusing on the breath and body for a few minutes before starting to follow the instructions. Sitting for a few minutes, focusing on the sensations of breathing, then widening the awareness to take in the body as a whole. Now, when you are ready, see if you can bring to mind a difficulty that's going on in your life at the moment, something you don't mind staying with for a short while. It doesn't have to be very important or critical. It should be something that you are aware of as something unpleasant, something unresolved. Perhaps a misunderstanding or an argument. A situation where you feel somewhat angry, regretful, perhaps guilty over something that has happened. If nothing comes to mind, you could choose something from the past that once caused unpleasantness. Now, once you're focusing on some troubling thought or situation, some worry or intense feeling, allowing yourself to take some time to tune in now to any physical sensations in the body that the difficulty evokes. Deliberately directing your focus of attention to the region of the body where the sensations are strongest. A sense of making a gesture of an embrace, a welcoming. This might include breathing into that part of the body on the in-breath and breathing out from that region on the out-breath. Exploring the sensations, watching their intensity shift up and down from moment to moment. Once your attention has settled on the body sensations and they are vividly present in the field of awareness, see about deepening the attitude of acceptance and openness to whatever sensations you are experiencing. Saying to yourself from time to time, perhaps, "It's okay. Whatever it is, it's already here. Let me be open to it. Let me feel this. It's okay." Then staying with the awareness of these bodily sensations and your relationship to them, breathing with them. Accepting them, letting them be. If you like, also experimenting with holding in awareness both the sensations in the body and the feeling of the breath moving in and out as you breathe with the sensations moment by moment. And when you notice that the bodily sensations are no longer pulling your attention to the same degree, simply return 100% to the breath and continue with that as the primary object of attention. And if no powerful body sensations arise, feeling free to try this exercise with any bodily sensations you notice, even if they have no particular emotional charge. The point of the practice we've just described is to provide, within the laboratory of a therapeutic program and the meditation practice itself, opportunity after opportunity to explore and develop more effective ways of responding to unpleasant feelings and emotions. These skills, developed in this admittedly highly contained formal learning situation, can then be used where they are really needed in our everyday lives. Each of us needs to choose a pace at which we can work the edge of painful and difficult feelings, especially if they involve painful memories. Turning towards such feelings and being willing to experience them is a very brave thing to do, but it can also seem like a crazy thing to do, since it runs counter to all our common sense instincts for self-preservation. In the final analysis, however, if we want freedom from the habitual reactivity of the mind, we may have no choice. In the end, the path of honesty and genuine openness may be the only path that offers healing and resolution. The alternatives may just not go deep enough, or may suffer from a lack of authenticity. This attitude of radical acceptance is expressed simply and profoundly in the poem called The Guest House by Rumi, a 13th century Sufi poet. I'll read it for you now. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honourably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. The beauty of bringing a wider moment-by-moment awareness to an old wound, a current pain or a difficulty, is that it opens up new possibilities for our minds and our bodies. In mindfulness practice, a spirit of gentleness and tenderness is combined with a spirit of adventure and discovery. Let's see what is in this moment, and this moment, and this moment. This means that we've got only the problems of this moment, and they may not even be a problem in this very moment. Rather than piling on all the problems of next week, next year, and the rest of our lives, which we so reflexively fall into doing. If our thoughts like, this is just how I am, persuade us that our lives will always be like this, then what started with pain or tension or sadness is going to give rise to even greater suffering. But if we're just here for this moment and in this moment with these thoughts and feelings and body sensations, and now in the very next moment the mind's patterns are changed in some way, and now changed again in the very next moment, events have a chance to unfold in an entirely different way. And yet it is always now, and therefore always workable, in the very same way as the guest house is suggesting.